Chapter 2 Storm Warning. At Nashan, I'd always felt sheltered, grounded, and safe. The landscape of the Outer Banks, the cherished family spot of the very different tribe I'd married into, could not have been more different when my husband Michael and I first began to vacation there on what was not much more than a sandbar that ran just offshore and parallel to the North Carolina mainland for about 70 miles. I felt exposed and vulnerable. For 3 summers, we rented a place in Avon, a tiny town reachable only after a long, monotonous drive along a narrow road lined with pampas grass, wind-swept strip malls, sand-filled parking lots, and shingled houses that faced either the ocean or the bay. My first impression of that narrow spit of land must have come from sailors in my family telling stories of storms and shipwrecks, because I kept thinking about ghost ships and death by water, and about Roanoke, Virginia, the English colony just across the bay where, in the late 1500s, all the settlers disappeared without a trace. We were living on the West Coast at the time. I'd been something of a rebel child, trying to escape the emotional straitjacket of my upbringing by relocating to California after college, and then marriage and family life kept me there. But Michael and I relished the idea of East Coast vacations to keep us in touch with family. Nashan was the meeting place for the Forbes clan, and it was important to me that my children be a part of that. For my husband's large Irish family, the Bighams, the Outer Banks was just as sacred. Some people loved being able to see water on either side, but I found the lack of trees and solid higher ground disconcerting. There was something so tentative about those houses up on stilts, exposed to the wind and the open sea. I guess I was used to having more to hang on to. I needed less of a sense that everything around me had been put together last week, and that it could all be gone with the next high tide. I was a bit spooked, too, because just before our visit I had had a terrifying dream of being on the Nashan ferry, of the children and I falling off. In my dream I grabbed Cabot and Beatrice, but I could not reach Charlotte, who slipped beyond my grasp into the sea. I woke up gasping, with the sickening feeling of having let my daughter drown, yet knowing I could not save her. If I found any reassurance during those 2-week mini-reunions in North Carolina, it was in the presence of Annie, my sister-in-law, the wife of my husband's brother, Harry. Annie was fun to spend time with, and a great mom, but she was also a pediatric anesthesiologist at a major teaching hospital. Avon was at least an hour from the nearest emergency room. But with Annie on the scene, at least I knew we were in good hands should one of the kids need medical attention. Harry is a doctor, too, a cardiologist, but his patients tend to be on Medicare. Annie works with children, and beyond that, she's a force of nature, so much so that her nickname as a chief resident had been Commando Anne. Her legend increased within the family when she performed successful abdominal surgery, general anesthesia, halothane in a mason jar, on Mr. Quiggles, her daughter's pet mouse. Back when her girls were small, I used to rib Annie about the way she kept everything in her home locked down with childproof latches, including the toilet seats. Very problematic during personal urgencies in the middle of the night. Everywhere she went, she carried a full emergency kit, including the bags and tubes for pediatric IV. I would venture to say we were the only vacationers on the Outer Banks equipped with airway kits.